Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Include it with Prime.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Keep Canada Weird, a weekly weird news roundup by the Nighttime Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to my weekly Keep Canada Weird discussion series. If you're new here, in Keep Canada Weird, my pal Aaron Airport and I seek out and explore some of the more offbeat Canadian news stories from the past week. In tonight's episode, which was recorded on April 27th of 2022, we're probably going to give you an uncomfortable feeling in your groin area. We're going to talk about a big potato in New Brunswick, a woodpecker in British Columbia, some gross chairs on the Toronto subway, and yeah, we're going to get into unlicensed circumcisions that were alleged to be conducted out of a cabin in Newfoundland. So let's get into it. Aaron Airport, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been very weird lately.
Yeah, I have noticed, yeah.
You have noticed it. Before we get into what has been making it weird and how that weirdness is manifesting itself, let's talk about you. Our schedule has been turned on its head. We're recording this in the middle of the day. Last week we recorded it late, and it all surrounds your play. How's the play going?
Well, the play is finished now, so after this week, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled, schedule. Play is over. We'll be back to Tuesday night starting next week. So, yeah.
And you're now shaved. You had a weird mustache last week because of your play, and now you're normal looking.
Yes, right. I had a nice big mustache for the character that I, because I would gray it up and gray my hair. Like I would just use this white face clown makeup kind of stuff that you would use, and I would just wet a toothbrush and mix a toothbrush into the paint and then run it through my hair and my mustache so that I was looking much older, because the character was like, you know, in his mid-60s or something.
Okay.
So
wow.
Well, yeah, I had to find a way to age up a bit. So
okay, well, that's a good problem to have.
I guess.
Rather than trying to age down with like
brown hair. That would be much harder. especially with my bald spot.
Yeah, that'd be an issue. Well, that's cool. Congrats on another successful stage show. What else has been going on with you?
Not too much. That's been occupying all of my free time outside of work. So it's been a lot of just working and then going to rehearsals and then working and going to shows, and then now it's over, and so I got some more free time.
Right on. I had a cool project on the go, and I shared this through my Instagram and YouTube channel for anyone who follows that stuff, but I as you know, I have a backyard fire pit that I adore. I love burning stuff back there, wood and other things. But every year I buy one of those, like at Canadian Tire or whatever, you get like an aluminum fire bowl, and I use it year round. So they last me like a year, because during the winter time, it gets all messed up. And by the following summer, it's rusted out, and I'll have to buy another one. And they're like $200 a pop. And I just got sick of paying $200 a year for a fire bowl that was just going to rot. So what I did this year was I took last year's rusty ruined fire bowl, and I used it kind of like as a mold, and I just covered the thing in concrete, and then I put a layer of like wire mesh, like chicken wire, and then I covered that in concrete, so that way it's like the chicken wire could be within the concrete, giving it strength. Once it all dried, I just peeled off the old fireball from the rusted fireball from the bottom, and now I'm left with this like 80 pound concrete fireball that's about probably about 4 inches thick, It looks like a birdbath from hell or something, I guess. And and it's amazing. I've been burning fires in it, and I feel like a god of my backyard when I have a fire blazing on my concrete homemade bowl. So that's what I've been doing.
So that's really, it's not the hobby of fire pits per se. It's the feeling of God that you have the hobby of.
Yeah, exactly. That I made something that this fireball, rather than lasting a year, that fireball will be burning in my backyard probably years after I'm dead and gone. It's going to be like, you know, they're going to find that fireball years later. And someone important was here doing some kind of religious ceremony with this thing.
And on the seventh day, let there be fire pits made of concrete.
Exactly. Well, let's get on with our main course here. It has been a weird week. I managed to dig up a couple stories. I had a few stories sent through from listeners, and then there was one pulled from the dark pages of Newfoundland's past that we need to get into. You probably know what I'm talking
about.
This is
disturbing.
Yeah. So what we have to go through is we have an issue with a potato man in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. We have some idiots in Saskatchewan who got themselves into some trouble. We have a woodpecker causing big problems in BC. We have a little talk about some disgusting stickers. And then, of course, we have a man offering circumcisions to children out of his cabin in the woods in Newfoundland. Where do you think we should start this? I don't know. I don't think we should start too heavy with the circumcision in the woods yet.
No. Let's save that one for when the listener or viewer is good and ready. Mm-hmm. But
they'll have a few drinks by the time we get to the circumcision.
Well, we'll start off with the, maybe the potato and the hockey stick, because I find they're kind of interrelated because they deal with big stuff.
Yeah, good point. In both of these stories involve kind of monuments, sort of things that I've never heard of. We talked about in Sydney, in Cape Breton, on Cape Breton Island, where we're from. We're known for having the giant fiddle on our waterfront. It's not unique for a city or a town to have this kind of monument to whatever that just becomes, you know, an important part of the town. New Brunswick, there is a spot that has the iconic Big Potato Man. The town is called Maugerville, New Brunswick. I have never heard of this, but the Big Potato Man is an iconic symbol. And worst part about it is the thing's in danger of collapsing. Before we get into the news about the Big Potato Man, have you ever heard of the Maugerville Big Potato Man?
No, this is the first time I've heard of it.
It's kind of terrifying looking.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of the Mr. Peanut.
I thought the same thing because he has the it looks like a big peanut with
he's got the top hat. And when I first saw it, I was like, that's, if I just walked past that, I would say, oh, they have a giant Mr. Peanut here.
It looks like an ugly Mr. Peanut, because really, if you're talking about a big statue, whether it's a potato or a peanut, they're going to look pretty similar. So it just kind of looks like a deformed peanut man. But
it does, it looked like, you know, a hobbyist made a likeness to Mr. Peanut because they love peanuts.
Like my concrete fire bowl is to store-bought fire bowls what this Mr. Potato Man is to like a store-bought Mr. Peanut Man statue. It looks like someone like me making my fire pit made a potato man, a peanut man. They ended up with the potato man. Regardless, let me tell you what's been going on with the Maugerville Potato Man. The iconic Big Potato Man in Maugerville is in danger of collapse. He's been standing there for 53 years, so he's getting worse for wear, says Daniel Boudreau, owner of the farm where the Big Potato Man stands. As the concrete crumbles, the farm's owner is hoping folks can chip in to save him. His hip kind of blew out there on Friday. Plus all the stress cracks and everything else that's on him, he's going to need some TLC, said Boudreau. Potato repair wasn't in the budget for the farm this year, so they've turned to GoFundMe to dig up the dough. The response has been phenomenal. We're pretty impressed, said Boudreau. We're pretty much at our halfway mark. The Big Potato Man is a local legend in New Brunswick, and his larger-than-life image is known worldwide. I thought I'd take a picture to show back home to my daughter that lives out there, said Faye Goodine, visiting from Campbell River, BC. Just because it's an icon and we've always seen it, it's one of those things that we like to remember. Area residents can't imagine the property without the landmark. I hope they can fix it. It's always been there and something I'd like to continue seeing there, said Brenda Crook. Wayne Kavanaugh says he has fond memories of the towering tater. When I used to live in Lincoln, which was basically right across from the Big Potato, and we used to go down to the river and look across, you could see the Big Potato, said Kavanaugh. The Big Potato has a long history, sitting along the old Trans-Canada Highway route. He was installed by Winston Brommel. He was built out of rebar and mesh and concrete. Basically, he was commissioned by Carl Harvey, said Boudreau. The family of the farm's owners say they're happy to see plans to preserve the Big Potato. As we get older, my cousin Buzz took over ownership of the farm when my uncle Carl died. So as far as the last name Harvey, I'm the last one there with my sons and my wife. It still holds value to the families, just memory and nostalgia, said Marcus Harvey, nephew of former Harvey farm owner. They're hoping the Big Potato Man can carry it on for another generation. They'll all stop in here. Everybody's got pictures somewhere, somehow, of the Big Potato sitting somewhere in a stack of pictures. Anybody who's been through the area, they always stop in, Boudreau said. He is hoping to get more donations rolling in to save the potato before it's too late and it continues to crumble.
Wow.
I'd like to be the journalist who collected those quotes. They were like the most mundane quotes. I seen it there when I went through. And I'd like to continue seeing it there.
And when I stood over there, I also saw it.
From over there.
From over there. It sounds like... you know, the people who live in the area like it and want to save it.
You're a tiny little town. You got a huge potato. It's like your claim to fame. You could save it, but they have a GoFundMe. I don't know how much money they need to raise to save this. It sounds like it's made of concrete. One of the good things about concrete is if it starts to deteriorate, you can just, you know, get off the broken part and just add a bit more concrete. Like, it sounds to me what they need is a couple bags of concrete, which are about $8 a pop, and maybe some paint.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I would have to see it in person to maybe have a better understanding of what this giant potato needs. But why don't they just tear it down and build a brand new one?
Well, you know. Yeah, because it's not the most attractive statue. I don't think.
Yeah, why don't they say in honor of our crumbling potato, we're going to build a new potato that won't crumble. You know, we'll make it in a way that some kind of maybe NASA could get involved and maybe some kind of a space technology could build a giant potato that can be seen from space.
And know what else they could do that'd be cool? If they take down the old statue, there's like special saws and stuff that you can get to cut through concrete. They could take down the old statue and with the saw cut it into strips that are kind of shaped like French fries and make like benches out of the old statue if it is solid concrete. That could be cool.
Yeah.
That's the way to preserve
Or they could let it crumble and just call it the biggest mashed potato, you know, this side of...
Well, they could they could let it crumble, put it in like a fenced in area or something, and maybe with trucks or something, just smash it all up to powder, and it could be like a sandbox for kids, and it would be like play in the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, or they could let it crumble down to the mesh that's underneath, and call it the biggest waffle fry.
We got a lot of ideas. We got to contact Maugerville and help them out with this.
Yeah, get the mayor on the phone. we figured it out.
Well, regardless, we will follow the story as it develops. If there is ever a development, be it a replacement potato or repairs to the current aging potato.
I'd say the only development that'll come out of this is, you know, after our GoFundMe campaign ended, we have $40.
And we fixed it. We bought three bags of concrete.
We bought some concrete and fixed it.
Like you said, I think it's best to stick with these two monumental stories back to back. So let's head from Maugerville, New Brunswick's Big Potato, and make our way over to Duncan, BC, the home to the world's largest hockey stick. I'm going to ask you the same question. Did you know that Duncan, BC is the home of the world's largest hockey stick? And a follow-up question, have you ever heard of Duncan, BC?
Yeah, no to everything you just said. I've never heard of this place. I've never heard of the giant hockey stick. It's all news to me, as the giant potato was.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you about the world's largest hockey stick, and I'm going to tell you about the persistent woodpecker that has been boring a hole in it, and in the trouble that's come from that.
Duncan, BC is home to the world's largest hockey stick, and now also to a persistent and pesky woodpecker.
I guess it goes to show what housing prices are like around here. He's looking for housing in a 40-year-old piece of sports equipment.
Woody seems determined to leave his mark on this 61,000-pound Douglas fir. Maintenance workers tried filling the first hole, but it didn't last long.
I noticed the birds pulled all the plugging out. It was like steel wool. And last Thursday, they had a lift that came and put a cover on it, and the bird's smarter than the people here, so it was making a hole above that.
Bird experts say the northern flicker is likely in search of food or a nesting spot. Lorraine Francisti has coached figure skating here longer than the stick has been around.
It's a landmark to our town. It was at Expo 86. I saw it there when I went to the World's Fair, and to have it here, it's a place for our town.
She hopes Woody will move on before more damage is done. Real-life scenes reminiscent of the classic cartoon. Woody, without a doubt, having the last laugh.
They're claiming it's the world's largest hockey stick, and this woodpecker doesn't care.
Yeah, well, and what about this? 61,000 pounds. That would be a pretty significant thing to have mounted to the front of a building. I'm thinking the woodpecker is probably trying to save someone's life and have this thing taken down.
Yeah, that's to me, like, how, you know, that sounds really heavy, like, to me, for a giant hockey stick.
And when you look at the hockey stick, it's kind of mounted, like, above the entranceways of the building. So as you're going in and out, and even, like, other doors into individual parts of the building, there's this massive stick above you. And it's, again, it's made of wood, and it's been reinforced with metal. So it's going to degrade anyway, like wood, is unless you're maintaining it and applying sealant and stain and stuff, like it's going to just break down over time.
It was the mid 80s when they built it.
Yeah. So imagine building a two-story 61,000 pound deck on your house, and that deck's been sitting there for, like, you know, 35 years. You're not going to be very confident walking underneath that thing. I don't know how good I'd feel about going in this building under this massive hockey stick.
Well, if I had figure skating lessons, I'd take the risk, because I'm like, well, what are the chances it's going to fall when I walk through?
Yeah, kind of like visiting, like, the pyramids in Egypt. Like, it would be scary to be trapped under, like, a billion pounds of rock if it ever did fall on you. But it's sat there for so long that the chance, like, would you be so unlucky that the thing would collapse while you're under there?
Yeah. And how does the figure skater going into their lesson feel when it's like, why didn't you put a giant figure skate up there?
Yeah, 61,000 pound blade.
Mm-hmm. With a real blade. Yeah, that's just true. Completely. You know,
don't
really,
worry,
really do some damage on somebody walking by.
Yeah, it's like, don't worry, you won't feel a thing if this falls on you.
No, that's why we went with the giant figure skate, so that if it did fall, you'd be killed instantly.
Yeah, the hockey stick would maim you, and you may have to lay
the
there.
Hockey
for a few
stick, minutes. Yeah, yeah, it'll be a slow death with the hockey stick, but the figure skate, that's instantaneous. You're done.
Right. Well, let's get out of Duncan, BC. I wish them the best with this hockey stick. But then again, if you're, you know, nature's going to be nature.
Well, yeah. And you can't, you know, again, a woodpecker does not speak English. You can't explain to them that this is not a great place for you to, you know, try to make your home. So I support the woodpecker. You know, it's wood. A woodpecker pecks wood. You know, you can't blame the woodpecker.
No, it's like time immemorial. It's going to happen. It's a circle
of life. My theory about, yeah, great white sharks, you know, if you get bitten by a great white shark, hey, you're swimming in the water, you know?
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to, we got a few here to go through. Let's not get dark yet. This story, I don't want to go too deep into it, but I do really enjoy this. As someone who does guitar refinishing on time, on occasion, I get the complications that come with like removing paint and removing stickers from things. There's an issue going on in Toronto on the TTC, which is the Toronto Transit Commission, I guess is what that stands for.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's the subways, you know, it's the transit system in Toronto, you know, subways.
So, you know. Yeah, so what we're talking about is inside the subway train. When COVID was going on, or when social distancing was a more pressing concern than it is at this stage of the pandemic, what they did to prevent people from getting too crowded on the Toronto subways is they put these big stickers on seats every so often to make it so you in the seat the sticker would say, like, you know, due to social distancing requirements, you know, do not use this seat. That way it will create places between people. But as the trains were getting busy, people would just sit in those seats anyway because it's just some stupid sticker, and you would, you know, so everyone was still just crammed in there. Just you'd be sitting on a stick on a seat that had a sticker. Now that they are no longer required, the whole thing's kind of blowing up in their face. The stickers have been there for like a year or so, and they're pretty large stickers that would take up almost the entire backrest, which is a fabric material on these on the subway trains. What has happened is they went through the trains and they removed all of the stickers that, again, occupy the majority of the backrest that is made out of fabric on the train. Anyone who has ever had a sticker on something and has removed it will probably remember having to deal with like the sticky goop that's kind of left behind.
Yeah, whatever the adhesive is that is on the back of the sticker. Yeah, over time you try to peel that off. First off, it's a bit of a chore. You usually got to get some soap and water involved and some kind of a scraper or something. But yeah, then it always leaves this film behind.
Yeah, the sticky, ugly mess. So a headline of this article by Blog TO will give you an indication of the plague that's affecting TTC riders. The headline is, "Disgusting sticker goop left on TTC seats could work better than the actual stickers." So what has happened, and actually this article is quite funny because it gives a whole lot of Twitter posts of people reacting to this. But when you go on the TTC subway trains now, the seats that used to have the stickers have this disgusting, stained, very dirty looking backrest that nobody will sit in them. So when they would have sat in them when they had the stickers, people are not choosing to sit in them now. To give you, I'm just a kind of read, I'll read a couple of the Twitter posts here. Someone tweets, "The TTC's accidental social distancing measure, sticker goop." And it's just a picture again of disgusting seats. Another Twitter user, whose name is maybe Jordan. It's not me, though. They say,
"I hate that." It's not you.
It isn't me. They say, "I hate that residue with a passion. The sound when you stand up after resting on one of them sends shivers down my spine." Another one, "Was on a train yesterday with the freshly shampooed seats. The summer students will..." Oh, no, that's someone saying that they're cleaning them. A lot of people are recommending the TTC buy lots of Goo Gone. Some people are suggesting that the residue will help prevent the bed bug infestations that occur on the TTC. I guess the bed bugs could be stuck to it. And some other users are questioning why they would even have fabric seats on such a heavily used subway line. A plastic seat would be easier to clean and more sanitary, and you could scratch the goop off. I agree with that as well.
Yeah, that actually, you know, stuck with me because why would you have fabric?
It's a dumb idea. Yeah.
Why would they initially say we're going to go with fabric seats for the subway?
I even in my dining room with my kids, I swapped my dining room table chairs from fabric versions to full plastic versions that I got at IKEA. And that was the reasons why, is my kids would drop spaghetti sauce or whatever disgusting. They would spill oatmeal on the seat and they wouldn't tell me. And by the time I found it, it was like plaster. But we have now this hard, smooth plastic chairs. And when my kids make a mess on them, I actually spray them with Windex and wipe it off. And they still look
bright. Windex, really?
Yeah, I tried a few different cleaners and I found Windex was the one that really made it look great. So,
See, I only use Windex on glass.
I've been using it on smooth surfaces like my plastic chairs, but I definitely use it on glass too. But Windex, it can surprise you sometimes. But I don't know for sure, but I've heard that it can affect some finishes. So you shouldn't use it on like countertops. I have granite countertops, and I think I was told never use Windex on them.
Yeah, so I mean... I can't imagine it's because it, when a subway gets packed, you know, and you have a long commute, you're just wondering at what point in time am I going to disregard a completely disgusting chair that's empty next to me and just sit down anyway.
Yeah, but then you get it on your back and stuff. And that one tweet that I read where the guy described getting off the chair and hearing like his shirt like kind of unpeel from being stuck to it.
Well, that could be a really good lint remover though. Like if you're on your way to a meeting and you're like, oh, I've got lint or cat hair on my suit, I'm gonna go sit in one of the sticky chairs.
Yeah.
So they could advertise it as a service, like, you know, late for a meeting, didn't have time to get the lint off your uniform, just sit in one of our sticky chairs here at the Toronto subway.
Yeah. Maybe it's that could be an unintended positive outcome of this. I think it's going to get interesting in the summer when it starts to heat up, because the adhesive is going to get more sticky and goopy and liquidy. I think they're going to, if they can't figure out a way to get it cleaned by then, which it may very well turn into replacing the seats, because what you would need to use to get the goop and the adhesive out of the aging material that these seats are made out of is likely going to destroy that material anyway. So I think
and it's time to get rid of that material, because anytime I've been on the subway in Toronto, they're just nasty looking chairs.
Yeah, they are. They were nasty before a sticker was on the here.
So I think this is a final nail in the coffin for them to say, all right, let's start replacing these chairs.
Let's move on to a story that I'm not really looking forward to. This is the story of a man who claimed on Facebook he ran a circumcision service from his cabin in the woods in Newfoundland. This isn't... Every story we've read up until now has been current, like the last week or so. This is a story that a listener had sent saying, like, you should do a story, an episode on this. Like, it's nuts. This all went down 5 years ago in 2016 to 2017. I don't know how I had never heard of the guy advertising circumcision services on Facebook. Did you ever hear of this?
No, I've never heard of this. Okay. I was never in the market for a off-grid circumcision. So.
This has led to... There's quite a few articles written about this. Obviously, it was quite a big news story at the time, but I think the best coverage that I found of it has been a series or two articles that CBC did. One kind of outlining the allegations and the charges against the man involved. The second covering the outcome of the legal battle. So to tell the story, I'm going to read a bit from a March 15th, 2017 CBC article, again with the headline, Man Claimed on Facebook He Ran a Circumcision Service from His Cabin in the Woods. And the kind of the subtitle is, Mother Says Josh Chubbs Offered to Perform Operations on Her Young Son. This is like a horror movie. So let's get into it.
No, it's weird.
Any stories about like that part of somebody getting hurt, like I have a hard time not having this like reaction that causes me to flex all my muscles at once and just go like, ugh. So let's see if I can read through this.
yes.
It's so do you know the feeling? Like, oh,
well, <"Ugh!" laughs>
So So here we go. So a Newfoundland and Labrador man has been charged with practicing without a medical license after a woman reported him to police, saying he asked her inappropriate questions about her son's penis and suggested he could perform circumcisions from his rural home. Carbonear resident Josh Chubbs, 23, was charged on February 20th under the Medical Act after a mother, whom CBC has agreed not to identify, called police to report that he had written to her last December after she made a routine post on Facebook that mentioned her children. Okay, I gotta stop here. So I think she wrote something about her kids. Yeah, like she wrote something on Facebook about her kids, and this person messaged her offering to circumcise them.
I kind of wanted a bit more detail on exactly message? What she said in the original post
that
he connected to. Oh, you might be interested in my cabin in the woods circumcisions.
Okay, well let's read on and see if it gets into it. So the mother, who lives in Conception Bay North area, said Chubbs wrote her to inquire whether her son, who is under 10, was having any issues with his genitals, such as infections that might require a medical procedure like a circumcision or a flungulectomy, which involves the removal of tissue around the head of the penis. To say the conversation took a bit of a strange turn is an understatement, she told CBC News. Circumcision is often performed within a few days after birth before discharge from a hospital or at specialized outpatient clinics. However, because it's considered cosmetic, the surgery cost of $300 to $500 isn't covered by provincial insurance plans. The mother described Chugs as an acquaintance and said she knew he worked at Noel's Funeral Home in Carbonear in 2015. She said he explained to her that he also had training in pediatric urology and could do surgical operations like circumcisions. According to Facebook messages seen by CBC News, Chubbs asked if her son had been circumcised, how he cleaned his penis, and several other questions that she felt were inappropriate. He said, "I don't want you to think I'm a creep. I'm actually trained." After pressing Chubbs further, she said he went on to explain he never finished his urology training because he fell into the funeral business. He told her he had training in pediatric urology and had dealt with lots of boys who had issues. "I did finish my course, got all my papers. It's nothing illegal. I'm trained," he told her, and added, "I just don't work in the hospital, which is I don't broadcast it, but it's all legal." In the messages, he claimed he performed circumcisions for his adult friends on the side and that he had all his papers. He added he could do the procedure right in his home, which she described as a little more than a cabin in the woods near the town of Freshwater. "At this point, I had Googled the length of time it takes to become a pediatric urologist, and he hasn't been out of high school that long," she said. "So I knew that this was something that needed to be brought to the higher power's attention." The woman noted the messages she received from Chubbs were difficult to read because of his numerous spelling errors. According to the woman, Chubbs claimed to have completed more than 50 procedures already, and even referred to her to a mutual adult friend who had a flungulectomy operation successfully done by him. That was removing pieces of
tissue or whatever.
Yuck. The friend confirmed it and went on to say Chubb seemed professional and that there were no complications from his work. The mom said hearing that Chubbs had operated on an adult was disturbing enough, but for him to approach her about doing unlicensed surgery on her child was what finally drove her to contact police. "I was absolutely horrified," she said. "It red flagged a lot of stuff to me, because for God forbid there would actually be somebody too embarrassed to take their child to a doctor who would take them to a friend who is clearly not certified to do these things." Too nervous to call the RCMP's Harbor Grace detachment to explain what Chubbs had said, she asked a friend to do it. She said at first police didn't take her friend seriously and hung up on them. But then when her friend called back a second time, they finally listened and charges were eventually laid. Not only was Chubbs allegedly offering to perform medical procedures without proper credentials, but he had also not even finished his apprenticeship to become a mortician. The RCMP are not commenting on their investigation. The mother said she went to media to make sure others don't consider getting their child treated by someone without proper medical credentials. "It's important for people to know that without the proper credentials, things could go wrong. It's scary to think that this could be going on in a cabin in the woods." And then it goes on to say that he's scheduled to appear in court a month or two later. So we'll get to the court stuff. But first of all, what the hell is going on with this guy in Carbonear, Newfoundland? This is terrifying.
Yeah, like, and especially like when we get into what came out in the court proceedings, it kind of opens up even more questions because, like, yeah, like I can't understand any aspect of this at all.
His motivation, is it like, as I read it, I can't help but think it's like, it seems like kind of kinky and weird, like just to be kind of concerned.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, the messages are there. They're real, you know, like whether or not, you know, this guy has ever performed any of these procedures is a different story. But, you know, yeah, it seems very disturbing that particular procedure is something that he would want to try and convince people to have done where he lives.
Yeah. And like, would he have gone through it? Like, whether or not he's done it before, would he have gone through it? If she's like, I'm going to drive out to the woods with my young child. And yeah, like you can just, you got all your papers and stuff and all, you know, like she said, all his messages, it was hard to read because they were so, the spelling was,
yeah,
so
the
poor.
Spelling was so really bad.
Oh, it's like, come on, this is nuts. Well,
yeah, so what does he think is gonna come of this, you know, like when he's approaching someone to try to convince them to have their child circumcised in his cabin in the woods? Like, does he think somebody's gonna agree to that?
Well, he's asking. Well, I guess that's gonna be a question for the courts. Let's get to the decision.
Late last year, there were whispers around Carbonear that Joshua Chubbs, a local mortician, was offering circumcisions out of his home in the woods. The mother of a young boy approached him online, trying to put an end to his bogus doctoring. She told NTV News in April that Chubbs claimed to have operated on a large number of people, but the court today found Chubbs's claims to be unfounded. Joshua Chubbs was initially charged with practicing medicine when unqualified and advertising medical services without a license. He pleaded guilty to the advertising charge last week when the charge of practicing was dropped.
He's satisfied with the outcome. I think it was the right choice. So.
In court today, the judge acknowledged the attention the case has received, saying he couldn't base a sentence on speculation. The facts, he said, showed that while Chubbs made the offer to operate on the 7-year-old boy, he didn't act on it. Judge Bruce Short says it was disconcerting that Chubbs pretended to be a physician with medical skills, but he said the bottom line was no one was physically affected.
Well, I mean, it was an odd charge to begin with, but I think more so there was, as the judge, you heard him comment, there was an awful lot of rumors and speculation that were unfounded. And I think, you know, that's fueled a lot of interest.
Noting the 23-year-old cooperation with the investigation, his age and future prospects, the judge sentenced the man to 1 year probation and 40 hours of community service. Justice Short suggested the 23-year-old defendant seek some counseling. After signing some documents, Chubbs left the court to begin the difficult task of settling back into his daily life.
Yeah, so he, for what to me is like kind of like, you know, before he was a serial killer, this is what he did. Like, that's kind of, I feel like that's the story. He got 40 hours of community service and 12 months probation. So,
yeah, the behavior is alarming. And it's, you know, like, you know, now they're saying that nobody has ever actually got, he hasn't performed any of these actual surgeries. So that's good. But like, you know, what if somebody said, I can't see anybody agreeing to have him give them a circumcision. It's just, it's completely absurd to think that there's anybody out there, well, who needs a circumcision will be like, yeah, oh, you'll off so I can save $500. I'm going to get it done by you in your cabin. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So,
a logical person wouldn't fall for it, but there are vulnerable people or people who don't know what's going, like, who just would make bad decisions. Or maybe it's someone who's new to the country and they don't realize, you know, how to arrange it here. Because in some cultures, circumcisions are like so common that they may come to Canada, where it's not as common, and try to find a way to have that done for their children and end up in this guy's grasp. So you kind of got to think about that. I'm just thinking, like, regardless of whether or not he did it, it's like, I feel like I would bet anything that this guy would have went through with it if she took him up on it.
Oh, I'm sure he would have. He obviously had some kind of a motivation to he was trying, you know, so many times to convince somebody to do this, that he clearly had a motivation to want to at least attempt it. And then
I wonder, was it sexual? Like, what was his thing? Why would he want to do this?
It would have to be, I would say. I can't see somebody being a hobbyist circumcisioner, for lack of a better term.
Circumciser. Well, what about
circumciser?
What we also didn't touch on is, like, of course he's like a mortician or works in a funeral home, like, because you can't be creepier than trying to get people on Facebook to let you circumcise their kids if your day job isn't
Worry, I deal with dead people all the time. Let me cut your penis.
Oh my god, this guy,
it's just so I can't, but it has to be sexual for him. There has to be some kind of an extreme sexual kind of perversion that he has.
That's the only thing that would make sense to me. Because if the circumcisions only cost between $300 and $500 from a pro, if he wanted to make a business, he'd have to be charging less than that to make people take the risk of doing it at his cabin. So he'd have to way undercut them, and it would be like some work and time. Like, so even if he was getting like $150 each one or something and had like a lineup of people getting it done, it's still not enough money. So I can't imagine he's doing it for financial reasons. It did say that he had some connection to the family, to this person he was offering this service to. Doing someone a favor or something would be,
Make. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, she wasn't the only one that he reached out to about this.
Yeah, allegedly. And it seems like there was some debate about whether or not that was the case. But
yeah,
I don't like the story. I don't like the fact that he got like a very minor slap on the wrist. If you were shoplifting, you probably
you would get probably more, you know, more trouble than that. But I want to see a picture of the cabin.
Yeah,
like, I want to see, like, what, you know, she describes it as little more than a cabin in the woods. Because when you say cabin in the woods, instantly a rundown, beat up old shack in the woods is what comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Creepy horror movie style thing. Like, is this that, or is this like, you know, a fairly decent home in the woods that you would technically call a cabin?
That is a good question. I don't know. And I hope that his cabin is far away from me and my children. I think that's...
Well, it's at least in Newfoundland. We know that.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's a long ways away. It's in a whole different area code. I'm safe. Let's get away from this story. I hope we never follow up with anyone ever doing this sort of thing again. And I guess as a public service announcement, if anyone has children and they want to have them circumcised, just don't even involve like Facebook or friends or favors. Do it through like your family doctor and
stay off of Facebook Marketplace when you're looking for circumcisions.
Yeah, exactly. Or generally any medical procedure. The only thing that's good on Facebook Marketplace is actually nothing. No good comes of it.
Nothing. Yeah. Okay.
Hello, listeners. Sorry to pull you out of the episode like this, but I want to give you a bit of a tip on how you can support the creation of this show and look great doing it. If you visit the store at nighttimepodcast.com, you're going to see a dizzying array of nighttime podcast-themed shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, and apparel. It comes in a variety of sizes and fits and colors, and I'm often adding new designs. So if you're looking for something new to wear, and you want to support the creation of Nighttime, go visit the store at nighttimepodcast.com. Now let's get back to the episode. Gotcha. We're going to wrap up the night, Aaron, with a crime in Canada. I think that is the best. That is the best way to describe this. This is some idiots in Saskatchewan who would probably be dumb enough to wind up getting their kids circumcised by people they met on the internet that work at funeral homes. That's how dumb some of this is. I'm going to read from what we're going to look towards is a CTV News article that outlines what had happened last week in Saskatchewan. The headline of the article is "Impaired driver with someone riding in the trunk came to pick up buddy from traffic stop, Saskatchewan police say." So here we go. An unusual series of events led to an impaired driving charge, according to Corman Park Police Service. It all began with a roadside stop Wednesday night just outside of Saskatoon along Highway 11. Officers were in the process of charging a person with driving while disqualified and impounding their vehicle, according to a Facebook post from the police service. When the person's friend arrived to give that driver a lift, she appeared to be under the influence of alcohol, police said. The driver failed a roadside breath test and was subsequently arrested for impaired driving, police say. According to police, a search of the vehicle turned up alcohol and, after hearing knocking, a person inside the trunk. A woman was riding there by choice and was unharmed, according to police. So that is all we know about this story.
Yeah, that is it.
So here's how it plays out is somebody driving while disqualified, which would imply either, I guess, they don't have a license or they have a suspended license.
Yeah, or maybe the, if they're in, like, I was thinking too, like driving while disqualified, I wasn't quite sure what they meant by that. If it was like the inspection was up on the car or there was, you know, some kind of a safety thing about the car.
No, this would be more worse than that. Driving while disqualified would simply mean like you're driving when you're not licensed to do so. So it would be suspended license most likely. Although right. I think in some areas it could be just not having a license. So they were disqualified from driving. They were driving. They were pulled over. So it could have been a traffic stop or whatnot where they realize, you know, the license and registration. They look at the license and, you know, on the computer, it's suspended for whatever reason. They're going to impound this vehicle. So they're going to take the vehicle. This is all happening on the side of the road. This person who's in the middle of this calls their buddy, their friend, and says, like, I'm pulled over. I got charged for driving while disqualified. They're taking my car. I need a ride home from here. Can you get me? And they say, well, who knows what they say, but they agree to come despite the fact that they're drunk. And they, while driving there, I don't know what this decision would be about, but one of the people decide, I'm going to go, but I don't want to be in the car. I want to get in the trunk. Because I guess they know they're going to face cops. So maybe she's like, I'm going to act sober and, you know, you hide in the trunk.
We'll pick them up. I can pull it off and you hide in the trunk because you are on bath salts.
Needless to say, this cop had a memorable night that will certainly go down in history for them as one of the more bizarre nights of their career when they arrest someone for drunk driving at a traffic stop and then find somebody knocking from inside their vehicle. I wonder if the person in the trunk heard the arrest and heard them be like, you know, walk this straight line. We're charging you with driving intoxicated. And they're just like,
I don't want to complicate anything. I know you got a lot on your plate right now, but I'm in here.
Oh man, these people. They should have, I don't know what to say other than like, there are, you said earlier, like, who would ever take up someone for circumcisions who are, you know, doing it out of their garage? Well, who would put someone in the trunk while they're drunk and go pick up their friend at a traffic stop?
There's, well, I mean, you know, I could see, you know, okay, you're at a party, everybody's hammered, you get a message from your friend whose license is suspended that they've been pulled over and they need a ride. Like, yeah, we'll go get them. Like, oh, I'm pretty wasted. Will you go in the trunk? I've only had a few, you know.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I'll go in the trunk. Yeah, you know.
I guess, like, drunk people will do stupid stuff. But, like, I think I don't drink. But my first instinct would be, like, does anyone have $10 so they can get a cab?
Yeah. But, again, you're sober right now, you know.
True.
Like, yeah, you're coming from a very clear perspective.
I'm going to have to think about this next time I've had like four coffee or too much Diet Pepsi and I'm intoxicated.
Yeah, that'll be the equivalent. Yeah, for you is you, you know, your metal straw clicked your teeth a little few too many times.
After yeah,
your
third the day, aluminum is going through my. The aluminum's starting to affect me.
Yeah, yeah, you have aluminum poisoning.
Regardless, though, this is a stupid decision they made. This person who is driving while disqualified is going to have big problems for that. The person who is drunk driving is going to have huge problems for that. The person who was in the trunk, I don't think they did anything wrong. They're probably just going to be like...
Well, no, they were just like, well, if she can't drive her car back, you should know that I'm in here.
Yeah. How did they get home? The article needs to, like, did the cops be like, oh, I guess we'll don't call anybody else. I'm going to get you home.
I'm assuming the cops probably put them in the back of the cruiser and took them home themselves.
And how old are these people?
Alcohol is enjoyed by many ages. So yeah, we're looking at a pretty wide, you know, set of ages here.
Well, the court documents would be interesting. I would like to, who knows what they'll plead or whatever. I can't imagine this case is going to get dragged through court, but it would be interesting to hear some of the facts and maybe learn a little bit about these people's backgrounds. It could have just been a stupid night where they made some big mistakes, but I would like to think that this is just another step along the long life of bad choices for these people.
Well, yeah, it's more than likely they, I don't know, are going to stay at the same level for the rest of their lives.
Don't worry about offending them. I'm sure they don't listen.
Hey,
but,
you know.
But if they do, please email me.
Yeah, and just kind of chart out the evening for us so we have a better understanding of what really happens.
Yeah.
I'm holding out some hope for these people that it was just, you know, maybe they're doctors and lawyers and accountants and they just were, you know, at a staff party that just went awry, you know, like.
Yeah, that's pretty likely. These sound like doctors and lawyers that would do this.
Yeah, these are professionals from the community. Like, I should let you know that I am a professional and I'm in here.
Yeah, you're right. That's what happened. I'm going to go with
that.
So
if we can find out who they are, I think, you know, this was just one bad night in a lifetime of reputable service to the community. And, you know,
if anything, we owe them a thank you
and an apology because you called them idiots right off the start.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, guys. Or sorry, sir. Oh, man. Well, let's wrap this up. We don't have any voice memos tonight just because our schedule has been a little wacky. But that said, if you're listening and you have a story of something bizarre that happened in your town, either last week or within the last however many years,
let us know. A story we haven't covered yet that you think would be worth some time on the show.
Get at us.
Get at us. Or if you have, you know, something you want to say, leave a voicemail.
Yeah, and I don't want to call her out or anything, but your beef with Ellen has gone silent. I haven't heard a thing.
I consider that a victory.
Let's end it with that. Aaron, until next time, the big potato.
Turn the lights on, turn the lights off. I had nothing for that.
Turn the lights on, turn the lights off. I want to thank you for joining Aaron and I for our Keep Canada Weird discussion. But before we part, I'm going to give some thanks. First, a big thanks to Aaron for sharing another evening with me and with you, the listeners of Nighttime. A big thanks to Monty Data for contributing the music for this episode. And a thanks to the internet's favorite cult leader, Unicole, for supplying the intro and outro narration. But the most important thanks goes to everyone who listens to Nighttime, as without your interest and your support, this show would be as pointless as it would be impossible. But with that said, keeping the show alive is and has always been an uphill battle. So if you want to help take a bit of weight off the show's back, make sure you're listening on the premium feed. And not only does it make the show possible, the premium feed will give you more of each topic than you'll find here on the free feed, as I'm adding exclusive content and bonus episodes regularly. So for about the price of a cup of coffee, help keep Canada Weird at patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. And with that said, let me thank the newest subscribers to the premium feed, Paige, Dennis, and Kirsten. Thank you for your generous support. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show but can't do it financially, you can help keep Canada Weird by simply sharing this episode on social media and letting like-minded friends know what we're doing here. If you have any story ideas, if you want to give feedback on the show, or if you'd like to contribute a voice memo for Aaron and I to listen to and respond to on air, you can do all that and more at nighttimepodcast.com/contact. And we hope to hear from you. But until then, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and let us know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.
Beautiful, serene, majestic, the true North, strong and weird.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.